Welcome back, my friend, to another episode of The Diaries of June. As always, I'm your host, Autumn, here to share Nana June's fabulous adventures in the Roaring Twenties. Well, mostly fabulous. It can't all be flapper dresses and speakeasies. Sometimes life gets you down, you know? But that's all right. If there's one thing I've learned from Nana June, it's that you can pick yourself back up and power through just about anything. The diary entry I have in store for you this episode hits a little close to home. Nana June's first breakup. You see, listener, I'm going through a breakup right now, too. It's not my first, but, well, I won't get into it too much right now. Long story short, I'm back on Orchid Island. I had to get out of San Francisco and just get away for a while. For how long? I'm still figuring that out. So here I was, back on Orchid Island, feeling blue, cozying up in the reading room with Nana June's diary and a pint of ice cream. Let's be real. And I came across the perfect entry. Nana June was only 18, but as usual, totally wise beyond her years. Really helped me to see my breakup from a different light, you know? Whatever you might be going through right now, listener, come escape with me. Let's go back to 1908 and hear a bittersweet story of young summer love in London. August 29, 1908. Dear diary, I think I might have broken a heart today. Not intentionally, but it had to be done. I know I haven't written much about Colin, which I suppose should have been a sign that things were bound to falter. It's like something out of an advice column in the London Daily. If he doesn't warrant mention in your diary, he doesn't warrant your affections. Colin and I met a few weeks ago at a cafe in town. I dragged myself in for a coffee after a long and grueling shift, expecting to talk to exactly no one. I'd wanted only to sit and do a little reading in the late afternoon summer sun before heading back to my dormitory. Two sentences into my novel, I was interrupted by an, "Excuse me, miss, is this seat taken?" I looked up to see a young man, admittedly a handsome young man, tall and trim, flashing a bright smile below his green eyes. As much as I had been looking forward to my quiet time, I invited the young man to take a seat. He introduced himself as Colin Mayweather and told me he was new to London, having just relocated from Ireland. "I gather from your accent that you're new here too," he told me. It's funny, diary. The New Yorkers always flag my accent as a touch British, and the Londoners always flag my accent as a touch American. Seems I'm the foreigner no matter where I go. Colin seemed happy to meet another pseudo-expat. He explained he'd come from Northern Ireland to find work in London. "Somewhere a little sunnier," he joked. As if on cue, storm clouds rolled over our little spot of summer sun. Colin offered to carry my coffee to a table inside, and we spent a lovely afternoon chit-chatting. It was nice to speak with a man my own age for a change. In my time back in London so far, I'd gotten all too familiar with having to fend off men twice my years. When Colin asked if we could see each other again, I cheerfully accepted. I wasn't expecting things to progress beyond friendly acquaintance, but Colin turned out to be quite charming. By our second coffee chat, our talk turned from polite subjects to that of favorite colors and family histories. He invited me to dinner later that week, my first proper date since returning to London. I was happy enough seeing Colin, diary. But something in the back of my mind plagued me. I couldn't help but feel like I was heading down the very road I'd left New York to avoid. A path that led to marriage, children, things I don't want right now. Things I'm not sure that I want at all. Still, it was nice to have the company. To stroll arm in arm along the Thames. To watch a silent picture and wonder if his fingers would find mine and lace together between our seats. To exchange shy kisses on the stoop of my dorm. Bidding each other goodnight before the house mother peeked between the curtains to find us canoodling. It was nice, Diary. A summer romance I hadn't expected to experience. Hadn't known I'd needed to experience. But, well, I couldn't say this to Colin, so I'll tell you in truth. He could have been anyone. It wasn't Colin himself that I fancied, but rather the notion of dating itself. I fancied having someone fancy me. Is that conceited to admit? I knew it wasn't fair, though, as Colin and I spent more time together. He started asking the sorts of questions I always associated with Claire's life, not mine. How long do you plan to wait until you get married? How many children do you hope to have? My father had asked the very same questions, as though my body were an hourglass with the sand all but run out. My father had asked the very same questions. On one particular date, Colin took me to a matinee showing of local theater production, The Lamp in the Shadow. And it was then I began to realize that it might be time to call things off. I'd offered to procure us some confections, he said as we strolled through the lobby, arm in arm. But I know you ladies are always watching your figures. It was all I could do not to snort. If only he knew about my midnight tea cake habit. I think he might have taken my suppressed snort as a show of offense, because he quickly tried to reassure me. Of course, your figure is lovely, he followed quickly. Just lovely. I expect you'll have no trouble when it comes time to bring a family into the world. I knew he was trying to compliment me, Diary. But suddenly all I could hear was Father and Claire admonishing me for letting my good childbearing years go to rot. And here was Colin, clearly of a similar mind, charting out our future together one skipped sweet and easy labor at a time. Bring a family into the world? I repeated, trying to keep my voice light. That presumes quite a lot, Mr. Mayweather. I hope it presumes that I would quite like that future with you, Miss Parker, he responded. Were we players in the matinee, I might have found his line smooth. But it was my life. And I was growing more uncertain about whether Colin factored into it. A few days after our matinee, he invited me to his flat for a romantic dinner. While I'm not particularly opposed to the idea of spending an evening alone together in his flat, I knew what sort of unspoken agreement accepting his offer would lead to. The kind that had me sneaking back into my dormitory before the house mother noticed I'd spent the night abroad, so to speak. I'll admit, Diary, I've wondered about intimacy, shall we say? I know the rule is to wait until marriage, but I've known many a classmate to kiss and tell, and it all sounds thrilling, to be honest. But as curious as I am, a part of me felt it would be entirely unfair to Colin. He wanted a bride on his arm, and eventually a mother to his children. I couldn't steal his affections one night only to call things off the next. So I did the kind thing. At least what I hope was the kind thing. I met him for coffee at the cafe where we'd first met. And I told him I couldn't see him anymore. He wanted me to explain, of course, but I couldn't bring myself to it. As sweet and charming as he is, I don't think he would have understood. A woman tells you she's not interested in marriage and children, and you form a certain opinion, valid or not. Be still, my pride. I settled for telling him, "It's nothing to do with you. It's entirely me." The original, "It's not you, it's me." You heard it here, listener, from Nana June herself. Sorry to interrupt. I just love her. Okay, back to the entry. Colin looked crestfallen and lingered a while, toying with his napkin. Was it something I said? Or our dinner tonight? I meant no expectations of, well, impropriety. He fumbled a bit, navigating the polite discourse of intimacy. "Not at all," I said as kindly as I could. "We merely want different things."
"I see," he replied. "I don't pretend to understand, but..."
He cast his gaze around for a waiter and signaled for the check.
"At least allow me to pay for coffee."
"That's not necessary," I began, but he waved away my protest.
"A gentleman always treats a lady," he said, soft and low.
He stood to leave, adjusting his cap. As he turned to leave, he took my hand and gave it a gentle kiss.
"It would be an honor to treat you again, June. I hope you'll change your mind someday."
I smiled and bid him farewell, feeling badly, but at the same time, felt freed. The decision was the right one, even if it was difficult. I wished him all the best, and we parted ways. But a strapping young lad with an Irish lilt, he'll do just fine with the women in London, I'm sure of it. I can personally attest to his skill with kissing, and for that, I'm glad we met. I'm also glad that you're mute, diary, or else you might lecture me. I can almost hear Mrs. Talbot. "If you give away the milk, no man will buy the cow." I always hated that expression, as backward as it is offensive, and always brought to mind an interpretation of animal husbandry that I'd sooner not think about. It's silly, isn't it? How the only path of dating is one that ends in marriage. There's no room for casual companionship, for two adults to enjoy each other's company for as long as it continues to be enjoyable. No room to say that we don't need to have a lifelong endgame in mind in order to share affections. But maybe that's just where I've found myself so far. I'm only 18, and I've seen so little of the world. I'm sure I can't be the only one who feels this way. Someday, I'll meet someone who sees things how I see them. Until then, when I find myself alone in a cafe, and a young man asks if the neighboring seat is taken, there is no reason not to see where things go, right? As long as I know what I want, I'll keep looking for it. I couldn't agree more, Nana June. That's so, so perfect. I never thought about how tricky it was to navigate dating back then. The expectation that it's probably going to end in marriage, that really puts pressure on things, doesn't it? I mean, I guess it still is kind of that way today, to some degree anyway. At least it is when you're pushing 30. That's kind of where I found myself with my ex. Okay. Are you ready to hear this? In a nutshell, we'd been dating for a few years, and it was all going well enough.
We got along awesomely, had all sorts of adventures together, very rarely argued, and he was always doing the sweetest things for me. Like, I absolutely love armadillos. So he was always surprising me with cute little plushies and figurines, armadillo-themed cards and treats on every holiday. Just adorable attention to detail, you know? We even moved in together earlier this year and managed not to fight about silly stuff like dishes and laundry. And I loved him. I did, but it just wasn't right. I felt the same way Nana June did. That we were heading toward things I'm not sure I want. And I know he definitely wanted those things. And that makes it hard, you know? The more I started realizing it, the more I struggled with feeling like I was leading him on. I didn't want him to work up the courage to propose only for me to shoot him down, you know? So, one very difficult night, after I'd had just the worst day at work, it all kind of tumbled out. You know how that happens, when one thing that upsets you suddenly snowballs into everything? Yeah. So I told him how I'd been feeling, and I told him it wasn't fair to him for us to keep dating. And it was because I cared so much about him that we had to break up. If he wanted a family someday, it wasn't fair to him for us to stay together when I wasn't even sure that I'd ever want one. I wish I could tell you it went as smoothly as things went with Nana June and Colin. But we had an ugly fight. Tears, throwing things, the whole nine yards. He was so, so hurt. I felt absolutely awful, but it's not like I did it on purpose, you know? I just came to the realization about what I want the same way he did, slowly, over time. And so, like Nana June, I did the hard thing. But it was the right thing. So, yeah, that's about the size of it. I moved out of our apartment, came back to Orchid Island, and beat myself up about it for a while. That's why I'm so, so grateful to find this diary entry. Nana June really helped me put things into perspective. Like, I don't need to feel guilty about not wanting a family yet. If I ever even do, it's my choice, you know? And who knows, right? I'm here, so obviously Nana June changed her mind about kids at some point along the way, so I'm not too worried about it. I have time to figure out what I want and how I want to go about doing it. And just like Nana June, I'm glad that I met my ex. I don't regret giving it a try whatsoever. Anyway, my dear listener, now that I'm back on Orchid Island, I plan to do some quality exploring. The rest of my family decided to hunker down elsewhere, so I have the place to myself. I know, it might sound creepy to be here all alone, but I find it really peaceful, actually. Today, I'm going to check out some of the sights around the island. My mom mentioned that there's an old cinema somewhere, so I'm going to hunt it down. I'll tell you what, listener. For the next episode, I'll see if I can find a diary entry from Nana June to match. I can just imagine her and her friends watching some of their first ever movies there. Or the talkies, as they called them. So cool, right? Really makes you think about the things we take for granted 100 years later. One thing I don't take for granted is you, my June crew. Thank you so much for sticking with me on this journey through Nana June's life. Until next episode, my lovely listener.
This has been June's Journey, The Lost Diaries, from Wooga. You can step into June Parker's shoes and become the detective herself in June's Journey, the number one hidden object game in the world. Live the glamorous 1930s life as you journey around the world, finding hidden objects, adventure, and even a little romance. Download June's Journey for free on the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Thanks for listening.